Welcome to the Lancet Respiratory Medicine Podcast. I'm Aaron Van Dorn. Today on the podcast, I spoke with Dr. Barbara McNicholas, consultant interventionist at Galway University Hospital in Galway, Ireland, and Dr. Jay Lee, associate professor in the respiratory care program at Rush University in Chicago, Illinois. Dr. McNicholas and Dr. Lee are co-authors on an open-label superiority meta trial looking at the efficacy of awake-prone positioning for patients with COVID-19 acute hypoxemic respiratory failure. Dr. McNicholas, prone positioning was recommended fairly early on in the pandemic for severe COVID patients. Could you briefly explain how awake prone positioning helps with these patients and whether there are any potentially harmful effects of this technique?
Prone positioning is something we do very commonly as part of our management for confirmed moderate to severe ARDS and people who are mechanically ventilated. Prone positioning, it's where you're on your tummy. It changes the shape of your lung and results in improved gas exchange and respiratory mechanics. So we can reduce the intensity with which we need to ventilate the patient. It's part of our evidence-based guidelines for this disease. And it's known to save lives. The same is not so well understood for awake prone positioning. And certainly at the start of the pandemic, it wasn't really well studied outside of case reports, which generally reported an unsustained improvement in oxygenation with the intervention. Despite this, it was included quite early in guidelines across the board as a simple and low-risk intervention. We know in critical care that there's lots of interventions that might improve oxygenation, but don't really result in a meaningful clinical outcome, such as a reduction in need for mechanical ventilation or a reduction in death rate. So as a result, a lot of studies were registered at the start of the pandemic on awake prone positioning for COVID-19 patients. And there's certainly good physiological reasons for why prone positioning would make your oxygenation better. First of all, your lungs are physically bigger in the prone position. Another thing is that the weight of your heart on the lung tissue is reduced. And as well as that, the weight from your tummy contents, so the abdomen, is removed from the base of the lungs and allows this part of the lung to expand. As a result, your oxygenation will improve. We also find that people's breathing in the prone position might be less injurious to the lung, and this can result in a reduction of self-induced lung injury. Although it sounds like a straightforward maneuver, just turning somebody onto their tummy, when you're doing this to patients who already have low oxygen levels from COVID-19, you can put a strain on the physiological system of that person. At the start, when we were designing the study, we were concerned that there was a risk that putting patients in the prone position could precipitate worsening respiratory distress that could require intubation. We also were concerned that this is something that might precipitate more cardiac arrests. And there also was a final concern, which is kind of an important one, was that you might improve oxygen temporarily, but if a patient then goes on to require mechanical ventilation, that, you know, you've left them breathing on very inflamed lungs without having controlled tidal volume, that the outcomes for them could be worse as a result once they did get mechanically ventilated, if that was what they required. So at the start of designing the study, we certainly had clinical risks that we wanted to account for in this technique to make sure it was a safe thing to do for patients.
Your study aimed to determine whether awake prone positioning reduces the combined incidence of intubation or death in patients with severe COVID-19. Could you talk us through the unusual meta-trial design of the study and why you chose this?
Yeah, sure. So the meta-trial approach combines the benefit of a prospective trial design, as well as the high power of a large multinational trial, with that of the faster setup of an individual investigator-led national trial. It combines mainly features of an international prospective randomized control trial and less of that of a retrospective meta-analysis. So how it started was that early on in the pandemic, the lead investigators of 5 national open-label superiority trials of awake-prone positioning agreed to participate in a meta-trial where we were planning to compare awake prone positioning with standard of care in patients who had hypoxemia from COVID-19 and who are also undergoing high flow nasal cannula support. So we took advantage of the explosion of video conferencing activity to meet and online and design the meta trial. And this involved setting up a collaborative meta analysis of individual patient data from each of the trials. We had to harmonize the data that could be extracted from each of the trials. We had to agree on a common primary and secondary outcomes for each of our individual studies. We went on to plan a collaborative interim and final statistical analysis at the level of the meta trial. And then we also agreed to report our findings jointly as a unified group of investigators. We published our study protocol, but we also sent out an invitation for other investigators to join this effort. And very soon after we started, a 6th group with a very similar research design joined our consortium. So the meta trial is definitely an original way to combine efforts from several investigators to speed up research in the setting of pandemic. it has advantages over the single center sponsored large multinational randomized control trials, which you can often have a long setup time, you know, where implements for agreements of the study need to get set up. But it doesn't lose any of the rigor of a randomized control trial, and that all of these features of a randomized control trials are preserved within a meta trial. There are some disadvantages in that because there were slight differences in protocols along the site, there are slight differences between the studies. And we also weren't able to track as slickly the study entry across the globe as, you know, a single center trial would be able to. But it's certainly an improvement on individual led studies, where one has to wait for each study to reach completion before you can actually publish your study. Therefore, you can't really include any study into a meta-analysis until a study has reached completion. So there's a high risk that studies may never reach completion, or studies may never ever get published. So the number of patients that need to be randomized is often a lot higher than is necessary for smaller studies. And finally, compared to a meta-analysis, which, you know, this borrows some features of, there's no real opportunity to control for heterogeneity once a study is done. Whereas with the meta trial, we had an opportunity to really pull out any heterogeneity between our studies so that we had a very common study, and that any findings we have are a lot, you know, a lot stronger than studies that are being looked at retrospectively.
Dr. Lee, could you tell us what were the main findings of the study and how did these results translate into the intensive care unit?
In this prospectively designed multi-center international randomized open label meta trial with a large sample size of over 1,100 patients, we found awake prone positioning reduced the incidence of treatment failure with 28 days of enrollment, while the treatment failure was defined as intubation or death. Different from previously randomized control trial with small sample size and most of their patients treated by conventional oxygen therapy, our patient population had acute severe hypoxemic respiratory failure due to COVID-19 and supported with hypo-nasal cannula therapy. And our patient population had the mean SpO2 to FiO2 ratio of 150. We also found the adverse event was mild. Specifically, we did not find any patient had cardiac arrest associated with awake prone positioning. And those adverse events was infrequent and occurred at a similar rate with patients assigned to awake prone positioning group and a standard care group. In addition, we found the patient who experienced treatment success had longer mean daily duration of awake prone positioning. Specifically, the patient who remained in awake prone positioning for more than 8 hours daily on average while on hypo-nasal cannula treatment had higher treatment success rate as compared to those who stayed in prone position for less than 8 hours per day. For the clinical implication of our study, we recommend that awake prone position is a safe intervention that reduces the risk of treatment failure in acute severe hypoxemic respiratory failure due to COVID-19 and who require advanced respiratory support with hypo-nasal cannula oxygen therapy. And our findings support the routine implementation of awake prone position in those patients. And more importantly, we should make effort to improve patient comfort under prone positioning in order to help those patients stay at least 8 hours per day in prone position.
Are there any limitations of the study that we should be aware of, and how might these affect the interpretation of the results?
Yes, there are three major limitations in our study. The first one is the duration of awake prone positioning. Different from intubated patients under prone positioning, the duration of awake prone positioning is completely controlled by patient. As clinicians or researchers, we did encourage our patient to stay in prone position and tried to help them improve their comfort under prone position. But the duration of awake prone positioning still varied among different patients. Our study was not designed and powered to investigate the impact of duration of awake prone positioning. But definitely this topic needs more investigation, especially more efforts are needed to improve patient adherence to prone positioning. Secondly, due to the very nature of our intervention, which is awake prone positioning, preclude the blinding. We cannot exclude that at least part of the effect of awake prone positioning was mediated by influencing the treating physician decision making. Despite the provision of clear criteria for intubation, clinicians could have refrained from intubation based on transient improvement of respiratory parameters during awake prone positioning. Or conversely, they may have lower intubation threshold for the patient in the standard care group. However, we did not find that awake prone positioning was associated with either longer duration of mechanical ventilation or with higher mortality in intubated patients. This would suggest that the physician were not influenced by correctly identifying patients who required intubation. Similarly, this makes a bias towards excessive intubation in the in-control group unlikely. Overall, those considerations should not distract from the problematic finding that awake prone positioning reduced intubation, regardless of the underlying mechanism of this effect. Lastly, in the standard care group, one patient out of 10 underwent awake prone positioning, with those protocol violations which could have led to an underestimation of the efficacy of awake prone positioning, we still see lower incidence of treatment failure in the awake prone positioning group.
The results of the study conclude that awake prone positioning is safe and had a favorable effect on intubation or death within 28 days of enrollment in patients with severe COVID-19 and hypoxemic respiratory failure. When do you recommend this technique be implemented in the patient journey to ensure the best outcomes?
Based on this study, for patients with COVID-19 acute hypoxemic respiratory failure who are requiring high-flow nasal cannula and have a PF ratio less than 200, awake prone positioning should be implemented as standard of care, and patients should be encouraged to maintain that position for up to 8 hours a day. So that would be the outcome from this study. What we don't know at the moment, though, is, you know, how to make patients stay in this position, when to recognize that patients aren't benefiting from awake prone positioning, and to optimize the time for patients who, you know, are not benefiting from it, and then to see what other alternative treatments we should be aiming to get these patients started on.
Dr. McNicholas, Dr. Lee, thank you for agreeing to speak with us today.
Thank you, Aaron.